More miles, less gas.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon. In Washington this morning, the government announces new fuel efficiency standards on cars, and for the first time, they'll include limits on greenhouse gas emissions. The rules will apply to all new cars from next year on. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Brett Neely reports.
After years of fighting, the auto industry agreed to tougher standards last year. By 2016, new cars will have to get an average of 34 miles per gallon of gas, up from 26 miles per gallon today. The Environmental Protection Agency rules will set stricter standards for car air conditioners, too, says David Friedman at the Union of Concerned Scientists.
The air conditioners in our cars and trucks leak, and the gases that they leak out have more than 1,000 times the impact on global warming, as do the carbon dioxide emissions that come out of your tailpipe when you burn gasoline.
But efficiency comes at a cost. The EPA estimates the rules could add $1,300 to the price of a new car. Call it a Cadillac tax.
The larger the footprint of the automobile, and I mean literally the size of the car, or the more difficult it will be for them to meet that the auto efficiency standard, and so you might well expect a difference in price depending on the size of the car.
Scott Siegel is an energy lobbyist for the law firm Bracewell & Giuliani. He says today's announcement is the first exercise of the EPA's new powers over greenhouse gases. Starting next year, big polluters like refineries and power plants will have to clean up their act. Industry may wind up paying more, but David Friedman says consumers will come out ahead.
We've estimated that the day you drive off the lot, you will be saving more money on gasoline than you'll be paying in increased loan payments for your car.
And he says all that money saved is money not spent on foreign oil. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Overseas markets are bouncing back after a losing day on Wall Street that saw the Dow slip 50 points. Signs of growing economic strength in Asia boosted stocks there more than 1% today. European shares are up almost as much. Pepsi announced this week it's racing to find new natural zero-calorie sweeteners, which might help it get around a possible tax on sugary drinks. Federal and local officials are considering such soda taxes, but as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, some think the idea falls flat.
A study out this morning from the Rand Corporation doesn't quarrel with the idea that a national sugary beverage tax would bring in money, but Rand senior economist Roland Sturm says a 3-5% tax wouldn't convince people, especially kids, to cut back.
It's not the magic bullet.
He says a larger tax, maybe 20%, would be needed, and it would work best, he says, if it made the price of the product on the shelf look much more expensive than other drinks.
This tax would have to be visible. If the goal is not just to raise money, but the goal is to change consumption, then consumers need to be clearly aware of it.
As you might expect, the industry is fighting hard against the idea. Here's Kelly Brownell, who directs Yale's Center on Food Policy and Obesity.
I've never seen the industry respond so negatively to any proposal, which proves to me two things. One is that it's politically feasible, otherwise why would they worry about it? And second is that they believe it would really affect consumption.
Brownell says a national sugary beverage tax would bring in $15 billion a year. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents, offering a choice of companies and coverage. You can find a local agent at 1-800-WE-INSURE. By Citrix, offering GoToMyPC, providing remote access to a Mac or a PC from anywhere. More at gotomypc.com/market. And by Vanguard, reacting to the stock market is investing. Taking stock in long term is vanguarding. More about vanguarding at vanguard.com.
50 years ago today, the U.S. launched its first successful weather satellite, beaming down images of cloud patterns from above, free to anyone who wanted them, which led to businesses like the Weather Channel. As Sabri Benashour reports, other businesses are looking to capitalize as more government information becomes public.
160 years ago, newspapers would lift weather observations from the Smithsonian Institution, call it a weather page, and call it a day. These days, weather data is still free, but it's data. Endless, seemingly incomprehensible streams of it. So if you're going to hang a business model on it, you have to jazz it up a little. If you're the Weather Channel, you got to, I don't know, throw a reporter into a hurricane.
It's very hard to stand here. Just the power of the hurricane.
But more importantly, you have to add value. Bruce Rose is vice president of the Weather Channel.
I mean, we have a lot of proprietary systems and a lot of intellectual property, a lot of secret sauce that goes into producing the weather forecast after processing the raw data.
Carl Malamud runs publicresource.org, a group whose mission is to make government data more accessible. He says government data streams have multiplied, and businesses that tap into them number in the tens of thousands.
I think it's pervasive. You know, it's like saying how many companies use roads.
Malamud points to stockbrokers who use data from the Securities and Exchange Commission, Hollywood filmmakers who use government footage, and mapping services that start with free GPS from the military. And he says you don't have to be a big business to get in on the act.
And it's becoming much easier with the decrease in disk space costs and computing power and internet bandwidth for a small startup to do something with it.
Easier, yes, but also more competitive. Take that example of online mapping services. Now you have free Google Maps that make money on ads, and just plain free Wiki Maps. To make money, startups have to come up with a niche. Ian White is behind startup Urban Mapping.
If you wanted to ask a question and say, find me the parts of the United States that are within 1 mile of a transit station, had a 60% or higher voter turnout, and are in a poorly performing school district, we can tell you that information on the fly.
And with the upcoming census figures, new healthcare data, and increased government openness, there are only more business opportunities to come. I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
And finally this morning, there's so much talk about that new tablet computer Apple is coming out with this weekend that the challenge is not talking about it. So instead of mentioning a particular product name, let's just call it that new Apple gadget. 2 days and counting down before its launch comes this story. Pennsylvania Seton Hall University is making an offer to about 1,500 new students. Go to college, get one of those new Apple gadgets for free. Not to mention a lesson in the highly effective use of free publicity. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.